I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Holding to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show, the ref from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and this time I'm joined by Trisha Ennis from Sci-Fi Wired and Sci-Fi Fangirls. What's up, Trisha?
Not too much, actually. Just finished watching the episode about an hour ago, so really looking forward to talking about this one.
So the fresh episode is fresh on your mind.
It is fresh on my mind. I had to make sure it was fresh so that we could have all of the various hot and cold takes.
Yes, very good. So, do you recall seeing this episode back in the day? Did you have an opinion of it, and has it changed since then? Because I know for me it has.
I did not watch it back in the day. I think I've talked about on the show before that I was not a big Smallville fan when it was on the air. I became one after the fact. I had seen some episodes, and season 5 was sort of the first season where I was like aware of it from like a more direct perspective. I had watched, I don't even know why exactly, the Exposed earlier in the season where Lois is a stripper for like 5 seconds. But I hadn't watched this one when it aired, so I had no opinions of it at the time. But I did watch it, or I vaguely remember watching it for the first time when I did watch the whole series all the way through, but I was churning through it so fast. I don't know if I remember exactly my reaction to it other than like, oh crap, this is the episode where that happens. So yeah. And I definitely had opinions. I think I had more opinions about this episode in retrospect than I had when I initially watched it. It is the episode where I think back and I'm like, wow, I wish that had happened differently.
Yes.
Because
that was a big thing for me because, you know, spoilers, this is the episode where Jonathan Kent dies.
Yes.
But Lana died before.
She did.
Oh, interesting choice of order. But we'll get into that. So in Smallville, the official companion, season 5.
Yep.
Written by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. Director Greg Beeman explained that there were two possible scenarios for this milestone episode. It's the 100th episode. They were leading up to it. Quote, either Clark and Lana would get married for real, or one of the parents would die. So, to me, the fact that Clark and Lana getting married for real was even on the table is very concerning to me. Because, you were going to have Clark and Lana be married?
You were going to have Clark have a first wife.
Right. And so, the only scenario I can envision them doing that and seeing it through is she would die at some point and then he would be a widower. Right. I'm like, okay. But then I call that and I raise and say, you should have just done that in this episode where she should. And we're just jumping ahead right into it. I'm not bearing the lead here. At the time, I truly thought, okay, what you should have done was, because there had been so much foreshadowing about Jonathan dying. Him dying was no surprise to anyone. Like, if you have seen any Superman media, it's like Jonathan Kent dies in 75% of them. They are obsessed with killing this character because it's like a rite of passage because he's Uncle Ben and Superman is Spider-Man. And you know what? Sometimes it works, and I get it. I think it works beautifully in Superman the movie. Because it teaches him a lesson about how, you know, despite all those powers you have, you can't save everyone.
Right. Exactly. Right? That's my thing about this, too, and I actually think it works in Smallville to a similar degree. Not perfectly, because there are so many other weird circumstances surrounding his death. Like, his heart was bad because he took on powers to fight Clark when he was kind of evil.
Yes.
And And he was the trade-off for, like, his death was the trade-off for Clark being brought back to life at the beginning of the season. And, which, by the way, Clark did not ask for. And
right, right. They make it some kind of thing where he's like, well, I chose to give up my powers knowing that if I was going to get them back, someone would die. No, this is all after the fact. Like, they were taken away without your consent. You were resurrected without your consent. And then you were told because of that, someone you love is going to die.
Yes, that all because of these things that you didn't want to do, that your stupid alien dead father, he's not even alive, decided on your behalf to do. Like, yeah, we're all happy that he's still around, but, you know, not your fault. But like the rite of passage of Jonathan Kent dying is important. It's the thing that I didn't like about Man of Steel, which was that they also decided it was important that Jonathan Kent died, but that they framed it instead of being he has a heart attack and it's something that Clark can't save him from despite having all these powers. It is Clark could have saved him and he told him not to. Jonathan told him not to save him because revealing his powers was worse.
So I 100% agree with that analysis, because at the time I was like, oh, well, it's nice to see him not die from a heart attack. And then I thought, no, the point of him dying is just because of a heart attack, something that even Superman can't save. But subsection, just to say, I understood what they were going for, because the big controversial thing in Man of Steel was like, should I have let those kids die, Dad? Maybe, right? And I'm like, oh, well, that's an actual like person like struggling with a complicated issue instead of like, I'm Jonathan Kent and I have all the answers to your questions, son.
I agree, but I also disagree. Like, I understand what they were doing. I disagree with what they were doing.
Yes. But the point is, yes. I think he was willing, like, he walked the talk, right? He was like, let those kids die.
Yes.
Let me die. Like,
yes.
Should Jonathan Kent be that way? I don't know. That's up for you to decide. But that's there's at least some consistency in that. But yes, ultimately the rite of passage, the function of this character is to prove to Superman or show him that no matter how hard he tries, what he does, some things are just out of his control. And that's an important thing for a character that everyone criticizes for being so powerful.
Right. It's you are not a god. There are some things that you can't do.
They say it in this episode. We are not gods.
He says we are not gods and then is like, but I can turn back time for you if you want.
There's a time crystal to resurrect people. so that's, and then, you know, there's so much of the Clark Lana stuff at this point. By mid-season five, you're like, all right. There was actually season five. It was charming to see them together when they weren't, you know, full of angst and drama. But this being the WB, of course, so much of the relationship was angst and drama. And then you get to this episode, you know, revisiting it, I was like, you know, I actually really do like Clark and Lana together here. It's charming there, because he's being truthful with her, you know? And so I bought the first half of this episode. Like, they were happy, and it was the best day ever, and it quickly becomes the worst day ever. And then it becomes the even worst day ever because he reverses time and everything gets even worse.
And he still has the memories of both of them.
Right. No, and yeah. So that's terrible, you know? And I get hung up on Smallville sticking with Clark being in love with Lana for so many years. Right.
Yes.
But if you think about it, right? If you think about it, there was a day where he told her his secret and he asked her to marry her and she accepted him and she said yes. And that was his day. And then it, you know, he got undid it and he restarted it and it all went a different direction. But like the memory of that day, the best day, he's like spends the next, I guess, what, 3 years chasing that again. And I can understand that, I guess, because he's like, no, everything was perfect. We can still try to make it that way. Now, does that excuse three scenes of him just going around in circles not doing anything? No, but at least I can kind of try and understand it.
Yeah, I guess I can understand it from that perspective of, like, he knows that she has the capacity to accept him for who he is and, like, and love him regardless or whatever, but blah, 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 stupid excuses. But I don't like them together. I never liked them together. I didn't think they were ever in a healthy relationship. And even, again, this is why the episode in retrospect makes me think different things, is like when you watch through like season seven, like you start to see all of the ways that if they were in a relationship after she found out, like this is the day she found out, this is the response. But in season seven, when they're together, after she knows, their relationship is terrible.
I don't disagree.
So that's why in retrospect I have a different opinion of this episode than I think I had at the beginning. Because at the beginning it was like, oh, it's too bad these kids can't make it work. And then you watch in retrospect and you're like, wow, no, she was terrible. Why didn't they let her die?
And then everything happened so fast at the end, I was like, oh, Jonathan's gone, okay. And then it really set in with me. Now, the next episode, Vengeance, is really where, like, where he's watching the video of his dad and he's crying. And I'm like, oh, man, that got me in the feels. You know, and now, you know, I'm an older man now. I've lived a little more life. So, I mean, I get the feels of this one more as well. But as a goofy, what was I, 19-year-old watching this in college, I'm like, oh, okay. Right. But anyway.
Yeah, I do think that I think that age always makes the shows you watch when you were a teenager different. And, you know, I watched the show when I was 23 or whatever. And I have a different opinion of certain things that happened that I did when I watched it the first time. This episode, though, I think is relatively straightforward for me, which is that I think it's good. I think it's a good episode. I think it's decently well structured. It goes fast, though. A lot happens in the hour that you're 45 minutes that you're watching it, but also very little happens. So, like, there's not a lot. There's not a lot of character development for most of the people that you're watching.
Right. Except for Clark. I mean, it's 100th episode.
Oh, Smallville, it's all Clark.
Smallville is. I mean, it's called Smallville, but it's Clark Kent is the main character.
Yes.
Lex is the sub main character, and apparently Lana is part of the big three. But that has. You know, that's a very hit or miss. So I get why it revolves so much around him. And then it does bring so much of a head to, you know, Clark and the Kents and Lex and the Luthers. And so I feel like, you know, say what you will about it, and we'll jump into it now. But I think as a 100th episode, this served its function very well.
I think it does serve its function pretty well. I think the 200th episode actually does better.
Absolutely. That is across the board. Everyone agrees, no matter what shade of Smallville fan you are. Everybody loves Homecoming, 200th episode, and I agree. That's one of my favorite episodes of the show.
This one is less about, like, so where Homecoming is about sort of honoring the series as it was and, like, pushing him toward that last little burst of becoming a hero, this episode feels more like a threshold where we're going from you were a kid for the last bit of the show, the last four and a half seasons of the show. Now you're an adult and you have to deal with adult things. From this point forward, you know, it's the turning point of his relationship with Lana. It's the turning point of his relationship with his parents and Jor-El. It's the turning point of his relationship with his own abilities, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, interesting you say that, Trisha, because in Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 5 by Craig Bearden, available wherever books are sold, Al Goff said, quote, "We talked about other characters, you know, Jonathan Kent dying, but," he goes on to say, quote, "but it just seemed as we were going into Season 5 that this was the year that the boy becomes a man. At some point, the mentor father figure has to die in order for Clark to ultimately step up and really embrace his destiny. Nobody can buffer or shield him anymore from these feelings. He's got to take it on for himself." So I think it's very similar to your take on it. You're in alignment there.
Yeah, this is sort of the season where the Kents go away. And it's the season where Smallville starts to go away as a location, and things start to focus a lot more on Metropolis and things going on in the big city and bigger villains and more higher stakes, you know, than we've had previously. Dark Thursday is coming.
Dark Thursday, yes! Dark Thursday, so good. So, all that said, let's get into it. Reckoning.
All right, McFly, do you want to start with how or why?
Jor-El. I went to him to try to change things back.
Back to what?
The first time around, I told Lana the truth about me. And I asked her to marry me.
What did she say?
Yes.
Oh, my God. What was my reaction?
A lot like that. But listen, it was a big mistake. Lex was chasing her on Route 40 and...
Clark.
There was an accident. I didn't get there in time.
Why was Lex chasing Lana?
He figured out she knew my secret. So I've always been afraid to tell her.
Yeah, but Clark, this time you can warn her about Lex. This doesn't mean that you have to lie to her forever.
Oh, she knew for less than a day. There's always going to be someone trying to find out about me, and as long as we're together, they're going to be watching your every move.
Reckoning is the 12th episode of Smallville's 5th season. It aired on January 26, 2006, written by Kelly Saunders and Brian Peterson, and directed by Greg Beeman. And looking back on it, I was a little surprised that Al Goff and Miles Millar did not write this episode, being the 100th episode.
Yeah.
So I looked up, like, what was the last episode they wrote? Because usually they would write together as a team. And it was Crusade, the season 4 premiere. Hmm. And after that, they have kind of divvied it out. I mean, Saunders and Peterson go on to become, you know, part of the show running group, the executive producers after Goff and Millar leave. But I thought, oh, wow, okay. I guess they didn't
really
feel confident enough in their, you know, the staff they had trained up to write these episodes. But that, because traditionally they had wrote the season premieres, the finales, like, and the bigger ones, you know. But season 4 premiere was it, and then, you know, they were out. So, and then, you know, Greg Beeman, actually, in this first scene, we hear James Blunt's You're Beautiful, the song, right?
Oh, my God, which was such a perfect song for the dichotomy of what this scene is.
Yes, because in the first scene, right, it's like the happy part, and the second one, it ends at this, I can never be with you. So good. Right?
Yes, and now this has become karaoke.
Yes, but there's a fun story about this, actually. Mm-hmm. Greg Beeman, he said in the companion, quote, I read about the James Blunt song You're Beautiful in some obscure English magazine, and I basically directed the scene to that song. When I direct a scene to a song and it ends up in the show and becomes a massive hit, I'm very proud. Because after this, it kind of gains, you know, popularity, because music for Tonight Smallville, available on. Yeah, that's what they used to say at the end of the episode. So, but yeah, it works so well. And it's funny that inspired this scene, because I don't know, like you said, this is the perfect song for this, right?
Yeah, because it's such a happy song. And then you realize, like, oh, no, it's like, I love you. We're never going to be together. Yes. Darn it.
And Lana shows up, you know, she's dressed for cold weather because he's going to take her to the fortress. You tell Clark's all, like, nervous. He's holding, you don't know what he's holding. He's holding something. I'm like, what is that? We find out in a minute.
But which, by the way, I hate that scene. Okay.
Oh, you know, it's okay, good. So good. I actually kind of like it. But, you know, he's told her, like, hey, look, I know that we're drifting apart and it's my fault and I'm sorry, but I'm going to tell you everything. And he takes her to the cave and she's like, wow. Mm-hmm. I don't remember this being here. And he says, it was left here for me, which is a little presumptuous, Clark. I think the Kryptonians just made this room, but sure, right?
Well, yeah, they didn't know their planet was going to blow up and you were going to need some secret way to get to this place that your father, I guess, left for you, maybe sort of in the Arctic.
It's all very complicated.
Yes.
So, but Lana, you know, she's going with it. She's in a really good mood here, which is the stark contrast. I love the scenes where you see day one and day two and how different everyone is. Because just one little thing in true life, right? Just one little, you know, swerve of the conversation can turn things in a totally different direction.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's like, we're going on this secret trip. It's going to be great, you know. And then later on, he doesn't. And we see where that goes. But they go to the secret room in the cave. You know, they insert the octagonal disc into the slab. And we see the journey from the cave to the fortress. Usually it's just been a big bright light.
Yeah.
And you're like, what happens there? But like, I guess it's some kind of tunnel wormhole technology that takes
definitely
the
a wormhole.
To be. Yeah. And she seems kind of nervous when it first happens, but then he's like, do you trust me? And holds out his hand. And I thought of Aladdin. I always think of Aladdin.
Yeah, no, actually, that's really accurate that it's a lot like Aladdin. Yeah, no, it is. It's a lot. It's that same. It's the same scene, only fewer magic carpets and singing.
We go to the fortress, and I really like the scope of the fortress here, because usually in Smallville, they've been this one little area, right? Like by the control panel, and we hadn't really seen, you know, the scope. You know, and he you know, he picks her up, and they jump up to the top of the fortress, because she's like, I'm from a planet called Krypton, and she's like, but you're just like everybody else, and he's like, all right, I'm gonna have to show you. So they do a super leap up to the top, and you see how big the whole thing is, which is great.
Yeah, and the fortress really doesn't ever become that big, I think, again.
I don't think so either.
They pretty much keep it to the one room that they've built. The one big room. But it's, you know, it's a cool moment to see how, like, how big it actually is supposed to be. And then she gets to see it from the top.
Yes. They've moved the pillars around and rearranged the green screens. And so now it looks like a whole different area, right?
Whole different section.
For a TV budget in 2006, I mean, I give him credit for pulling this thing off, you know, and I mean, it's of course it's more of like the Christopher Reeve esque, you know, fortress. Do you like that, like that look for Krypton and all this stuff?
Or? The all the crystals and stuff. I mean, I think I think it works. I don't know that I could think of a better version. I think it both looks futuristic and somehow prehistoric, because it's crystalline, so it's, you know, rocks, but pretty rocks. And yeah, I think it looks cool. I think it has looked cool ever since then, but that's pretty much been the way that we've envisioned it forever. We're all just paying homage to that original design.
Yeah, even when they try to stray from it, they still incorporate, like, okay, it's going to be white, it's going to be crystally. We might have like a real, we might have a real computer over here, but there's also going to be crystals all around. And I like that. It's, I love what you said. It's futuristic but prehistoric, because it's alien. So it's so far away from our understanding of technology that I'm like, all right, cool. You know, it's not, I don't know. I think it truly is timeless. And I think that's why we keep going.
I think it does work as like a timeless idea, because it's, I mean, we're never going to design like that. But they throw it into all these different things. But I think if the fortress had not been in the Arctic, it would look different. Like, yeah, it's supposed to be crystals, but it looks like ice.
I see.
You know, so it's an ice palace. But at the same time, like, you know, when you're thinking Fortress of Solitude, something that's solid, like solitude, also makes me think quiet, and snowy things are quiet. So it's, I think that the design just works.
So Lana's like, why are you telling me this now? Because she's like, no one knew. And I want to be like, well, not no one, but
not no one.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You're the first person I've ever told this to, Sherry Clark, whatever. But she's like, why are you telling me this today? Why now? After all those times you saved me and I never even knew you were there. And I was waiting for her to bring up, like, were you there in that tornado in season one? But
was I crazy? Did you let me think I was crazy?
Well, no, really, whenever these characters, like, get find out about Clark's secret, I wanted to be like, all right, here's a list of things that I've been suspicious about. Let's go down them together. But then he says, well, Lana, it's a very special day or whatever. And he pulls out what he had been holding earlier, and it was the coal. And he crushes the coal. And there's a diamond in it. Now, this is
not how it works.
This is a tribute to Superman 3.
I know.
Where he does the same thing. And he does to Lana, no less. To Annette O'Toole's Lana Lane.
Yes, Annette O'Toole's Lana Lane.
Superman. Now, in that Superman 3, he wasn't really proposing to her, was it? He just replaced a ring? But I mean, I would have been all for it. Like, that's the one continuity where I would be happy for Clark to end up with Lana is the Christopher Reeve movies, so.
Okay, I mean, that's fine. I love that version of Lois as well. But so the reason that I don't like the scene is not because, I mean, it's cheesy as hell. Yeah. But I think it does work. And, you know, later on when he proposes elsewhere, it's also cheesy, but it's cheesy in a different way that I actually appreciate. It's just so dumb to me, because the whole time I'm like, that's not actually how diamonds happen. And also, why is it perfectly shaped?
That's not how this works. That's not how any
of this
works.
That's not how any of this works. A diamond, they don't come out of the rocks looking like diamonds. They come out looking like lumps, and then you cut them into diamonds, and then you put them into the setting, and it's a whole thing.
But then he uses heat vision to put it on a lady.
Still also not how it works.
I think if this was not Lana from Smallville, you might have a better opinion of
No, I don't. I think it's so cheesy. I think it's acceptable. I think it fits in cheesiness. I think younger me thought it was very cute.
Okay.
But adult me thinks it's very dumb.
Fair enough.
But I think it's fine. I think it's fitting the version of Clark that is right now.
Yes.
It's like, look, I'm going to show you all of my superpowers to make you a ring.
That's absolutely right. There is a lot in this episode of the Clark of right now decisions that he makes. But think about it. If you were a Klana shipper back in 2006, you were losing your mind right now, right? Yeah. I mean, I wasn't either by this point. But you were losing your mind right now. And then to have it all ripped away, and we'll get to that at the end, but it's like, wow, like, I don't think anybody was happy at the end. Like, regardless of how well this episode was done in the journey and all that, like, at the end, you're all like, wait a minute. But anyway, we'll get there. So you go to the opening credits. We come back.
Yeah. Yeah, we're only to the opening credits now.
Yes.
All of this has already happened.
It's the 100th episode, Trisha.
I know. Right? So much happened so fast.
So
anyway, opening credits.
Opening credits. We come back. It's the Kent farm. They're driving their blue truck, which is, like, good for you, because the red truck got wrecked a few episodes ago. And, and like, okay, we didn't just mindlessly replace it with another identical red truck. We have a blue truck. So I appreciated the continuity there, because I keep an eye on those sorts of things. But the Kents come back. They've been at the polls or something, because it's election day.
And, yeah, it is election day.
I don't know what day. I don't know what time of year.
It's supposed to be November.
I mean,
if it's election day, it's November.
Right. I just was confused because it, like, I understand TV schedules and stuff, but this happened, you know, as we said, the end of January.
Yes.
When it came out. So that really throws off the timeline for things. But anyway, it's election day, and Clark's like, "Mom and Dad, I have something to tell you. I told Lana my secret."
He says it exactly like that. In his 1940s radio announcer voice.
Extra, extra. So, but then Martha's like, "Oh, that's great, honey. I'm so proud. I know you've been struggling this for a while." And Jonathan's like, "Oh, I think their reactions are pretty on character."
So. Yeah. I mean, Martha only ever wants him to do what makes him happy. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have super strong feelings about, like, he must keep his secrets.
She's also a huge Klana shipper.
Yes, she likes Lana. I mean, Lana is not a bad person yet.
Yet.
So, yeah, she sees Lana the way that he does, that, like, she's, you know, in the perfect little girl next door. She's known her since she was a little kid. You know, she has nice feelings about her. I don't blame her for that. But also she just wants Clark to be happy, and Clark is happy with Lana. So, yeah. But then, of course, he also says that I asked her to marry me.
Yeah, and I think that he didn't tell his parents this because his dad would have tried to talk him out of it.
Yes.
Like, I'm just going to do this without asking anyone. Although the question didn't come to my mind, did he ask Henry Small?
No.
Lana's hand in marriage?
I don't think he asked anyone. I think I think this decision was him panicking. I think he freaked out. Like, I'm going to lose Lana if I don't do something drastic, and that drastic thing is going to be asking her to marry me. Because don't forget, he is 19.
Yes, 19. Where are your resources to start a life together when you're 19 years old? Like, even Clark says later, I know what you're going to say, Chloe, that we're too young. And I'm like,
hey,
yeah, you are too young.
Lana owns a business.
Clark is smart. Clark is a genius.
He just dropped out of college.
I'm a college dropout.
Or he
My
hasn't
girlfriend
yet. He's about
runs
to.
The only successful, coffee shop in town. I am hitching my wagon to this train, and we're going all the way to the top. So, you know, we're having fun here with this conversation, but at the end of it, you know, Jonathan's like, well, it's just hard to see your son growing up and realizing he doesn't need his dad anymore. And Clark's like, I'm always going to need you, Dad. And that's TV speaker being like, this character is dead. This character will not live past this episode. So at that point, you kind of knew. You're like, oh.
In the trailer,
they had shown like a car accident. You're like, oh, who's going to be in that? Who's going to die? But there's a lot of foreshadowing here.
Yeah, there's a lot of foreshadowing of Jonathan's death in this episode. Like, there has been foreshadowing this whole season. But this episode specifically, like, there is that moment. That's the biggest one. That's, like, the waving the giant banner that says Jonathan is going to die by the end of this episode. But, you know, there are other moments, too, where when, like, he and Martha are talking or, you know, whatever. That also foreshadow it.
And next we go to Lois, and she's at her apartment above the Talon.
Yep. At her apartment above the Talon.
It's also become the campaign headquarters because there's posters of Jonathan Kent everywhere.
Uh-huh.
But again, I question the resources being used to, oh, here's campaign posters. I'm going to put them in my own apartment. Why? These should be on the street somewhere, right? Not in my room.
She just had extras.
The set decorator's like, all right, it's the 100th episode. They're doing an election. Let's just put these things everywhere. But Lois is, she's on the phone with somebody. She starts the sink. And there's like a toaster nearby as well. And she gets up on a stool to go get some like Twinkies or something. Yeah. Some Hostesses from above on the top shelf. She almost falls, but then Lana is there to catch her. So this is important for later. Lana has come to help Lois with the, I guess, campaign day or whatever she was going to help her with.
She does own the Talon.
Yeah. What are you doing?
And the volunteers they have can't bunt to save their lives.
Very true. So Lana's like, oh, sorry, I'm late. You know, something came up this morning. And Lois is like, oh, no, we're good. I'm glad you're here. Da, 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 da. So this is day take one and day take two. I guess Lana was so upset with Clark that she just didn't even help out with election
day. No, because she doesn't show up because Chloe's the one who takes her to the party.
Right.
So she never showed up.
And Lois did fall and was lying there unconscious and was about to get electrocuted and die, which is a very important thing I want to bring up later.
Yes.
But, you know, Lana's not there to save her then. She's there now. Lois, you know, she's intuitive. So she's like, hey, Lana, what's going on? And Lana's like, if you knew someone that you loved and you thought you knew them, but then you found out something very different, would that change your feelings? So what did you think of this conversation here, Trisha?
She's so cryptic, honestly. She's really hiding her feelings and like what's going on. I'm shocked Lois could figure out that it was about Clark. I mean, I think it's good. I think Lois gives a lot of
great advice.
She right? does, but she, throughout the series, she gives a lot of advice about dating Clark to whoever is dating him or into him in the moment until it's her. And then she takes none of her own advice.
Well, that's the paradox of humanity, right?
Right.
There's
yeah.
It, and said for that.
It's also another opportunity for the show to, you know, sort of like nudge the audience who knows what eventually is going to happen with Lois and Clark, because she says, you know, something to the effect of,
I would be lucky to end up with someone as honorable as Clark someday.
Yes. And she makes...
Is everybody paying attention? They're going to be together in the future.
It's going to take a while, though.
It's going to take about 6 seasons.
It's going to take a few more seasons. Yeah, and but they do that a lot. Like, every time there's an opportunity for Lois to, like, make a joke about how stupid it would be to date Clark. They do it. But I think by this point it had sort of grown on me. But I love Lois, so, you know, she can do no wrong in my eyes.
So then we go to Chloe and Clark and at the Daily Planet, as mm-hmm. Clark just dropping by Chloe's place of work on a regular basis. And he tells Chloe that he told Lana his secret.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, wow, great. I feel so bad for Chloe and all these because
too.
Clearly she has been Clark's confidant. And she's also still in love with Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, Clark is just flaunting his relationship with Lana in her face. Completely
yep.
oblivious. Although there is one scene where he's not oblivious, and I liked it, but we'll get there. we go through like three signpost points during this conversation they're having. One is some woman receives flowers. I don't know if it was like for an engagement. I don't know what it was for, but she got some flowers, and she was
and
really
she's
excited
very
about
excited.
Flowers. At first, I was like, on day take one, I was like, she's just getting engaged or something? I was like, no, that wouldn't make any sense. Day take two, I was like, no, because you can't do it that way. So she just is really excited about those flowers. Take signpost two is this horrible day player actor is like, you can't fire me, I quit.
Yes, like, and he really throws his ID card on the ground.
Well, I never. So, and his performance is equally bad in both versions of the day. Just want to point that out.
Well, if he wasn't so bad, you wouldn't notice.
That's correct. It's like, okay, here's your direction. We need you to be over the top because we need the audience to recognize this in the background, okay? And then he really took that to heart. And then third is when Chloe and Lana finally... Chloe and Clark kind of finally settle down at her desk. She gets a phone call, and it's a Chinese restaurant. She's like, wrong number. So remember, guys, these three things happen. They're going to be very important when we revisit this day. But I love Chloe's all her reactions. Like, well, I have to be happy, but I'm not happy,
yep.
but I am happy. And so I thought it was well played.
Yeah, I also think it's well played. I think by this point, the Chloe and Clark relationship is sort of settling down. Like Lois is here, so you know it's never going to happen. All the people, I think most of the people by this point, I would hope most of the people by this point who thought that Chloe was going to be Lois have figured out that that's not going to happen.
I don't know. They really throw us another curveball in Vessel, don't they?
I'm aware of what happens on Dark Thursday. I like that scene. It was cute, but also what happens later was cute and interesting. And anyway, I think at this point, like, Chloe just really needs an actual love interest that isn't Clark, which thankfully we get. I think they always write that relationship really well, which is one of the reasons why I like it so much, because it's men and women can be friends even if they have feelings for each other, because all you have to do is be supportive of the other person, like recognize that it's not their responsibility to, you know, decide like to. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to say something along the lines of like they. It's not your feelings are not their responsibility. So, and I think Chloe recognizes that it's not Clark's fault that he doesn't feel the same way about her. And if she wants this relationship to stay, if she wants to be around him still, she's going to have to just be his friend and be supportive.
Yeah, their relationship has come a long way since like season two.
Yes.
Because, you know, Clark, he tells her like, oh, I asked her to marry me. And Chloe's like, wow, that wasn't on the Doppler. And he's like, I know what you're going to say. We're too young and all this. She's like, no, Clark, what I was going to say is that Noam deserves to be happy. What's actually wrote it down? Oh, this one. And she says, no, Clark, what I was going to say is if anyone deserves to be happy, Clark, it's you. I'm like, oh, that's a very mature response. We've come along.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she wants him to be happy. She'd rather he was happy with her. But if he's not going to be her, one of her best friends, it's not a terrible decision.
Because, you know, you have to love someone enough to let them go.
Yes, you do. And if they come back, that's how you know.
That's how you know. So, oh, by the way, we don't know what Lana's answer was this whole time.
Oh, no, she hasn't answered yet. He told her not to.
His parents are like, well, what did she say? He's like, well, I told her not to. I know it was a lot to take in. Granted, he told her he was an alien and all these things, but still, no answer kind of is an answer. That's been my experience in life about anything, really. So the fact that it's been like, I don't know, a few hours and he hasn't heard, because he even tells Chloe, I don't know, she hasn't called by now. And then the phone rings and he's like, oh, you think it might be Lana, but it's like Foo's Kitchen or something. So, right.
It's just it's a well-timed phone call.
Yes, yes, yes. So then we cut back to later on in the day, he's got his suit and tie on, ready for the election party. Lana pulls up in her Jeep. Vehicle continuity show, well done. She's been driving that Jeep for a while, so good job. And
it wasn't involved in a tornado.
Yes, yes. And she comes up and basically says, yes, I will marry you, right? And it's a wonderful moment. The camera had cranes up and he picks her up and they spin around and it's the best day ever, right? Yes. And again, you're like a couple acts in here and you're like, wow, this is like the culmination of like what this show has been up to this point. You know, I understand why they chose to do this for their 100th episode.
I understand why they chose to do this for their 100th episode as well. Dramatically, it makes a lot of sense. But from a real life relationship perspective, you should not drop a bomb about yourself in the same breath that you ask someone to marry you. Because I don't, like, in the same way that, like, you'll see when they're in a relationship in season 7 and it's terrible, is that, like, you don't know how your relationship will change now that everything is out in the open. Mm. And, like, deciding, okay, yes, we are going to be together forever, that's not a great moment to do it. Because you don't know what's going to happen in the next 6 months, let alone the next 60 years.
Yeah, you don't know what the new normal is going to be.
Right.
So, yeah,
give it a breather.
Today, right. She might say today, yeah, I'm cool with you being an alien. Although there have been several instances across the course of this show mm-hmm. where it's like, hey, Chloe, maybe I'm an alien. Wow, that's awesome, Clark. Hey, Lana, maybe I'm an alien. Oh, that's weird. I don't know. Like, there's a track record. And then she thinks he killed her parents, right? Because yep. Did he explain the meteor shower? I bet he left that part out.
He hasn't explained the meteor shower yet. There's a lot of baggage in their relationship, and there's more baggage later, but yeah.
Jonathan and Martha arrive at the, you know, election night, right?
Because everything's happy.
You're right. This episode is fast forward. I'm like, wow, you know.
It moves.
But that's because we have to watch it twice.
Yes.
and we only have time for one episode. So that's
it can only be
on
sitcom length.
That's really good.
And many things have to happen. Like, Clark has to reveal his abilities, his like actual truth to Lana. They have to get engaged. Jonathan has to be elected to the state senate. Then bad things have to happen. And also Lex has to have some sort of weird crisis.
Yes.
All of that has to happen twice.
Twice.
Twice. So,
Jonathan and Martha arrive, and there's a little moment where he helps her with the necklace, and it's like, yep. Oh, this is cute. Foreshadowing, right? And then Clark, of course, does it later on in the episode. Yep. They don't make a big deal about it here. Like, oh, no. You're the only, you know, it's just a nice, cute
they
moment
make
between
a big enough deal in the direction, and the fact that they decide to specifically, like, it's not a wide shot of Jonathan helping her with the necklace. It's his hands putting the necklace on her. Mm-hmm. So that's intentional. And if you are a film nerd, you probably pick up on that. If you're not, yes, maybe you don't.
This is not how they usually visually tell a story. Something must be afoot.
Something is different.
So they arrive. Clark and Lana are there. We see Lana's hand on Clark, and we see the ring. And she's like, oh, Mr. and Mrs. Kent. And Jonathan says something to the effect of, Lana, we can't imagine our son spending his life with anyone but you. And I wish there was like a, I mean, obviously, like we were just saying, there's so much to cram into this episode.
Yeah.
I wish there was some kind of family moment where we sit down and talk about this. Like, remember when Pete found out the secret? They were like, all right, Pete, here's the deal.
Here's the rules.
Yeah. And this is huge. Like, that not only did he tell her his secret, They're engaged now. They're going to be married. She really is part of the family. Mm-hmm. But they got so much other stuff to do here. And hey, even in the episode itself, it's election night. They probably figure tomorrow we'll talk about this. But the fact that there was no... And this is the thing. Jonathan dies in this episode. So yeah. There's no like, hey, Lana and my son are going to be together forever moment. And then, of course, there's no like, hey, Lois and my son are going to be together forever moment. It's just, it's weird that he's been around all these characters and all these situations, but there was never a time when there was like Lois and Clark at the cancer, which is something I really liked in, say, like Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. There was like Lois and Clark went back to Smallville and the kids were there. I don't know. I like those family moments, right? I'm just saying. So.
Yeah, there was a lot more opportunity for there to be family moments, though, in a show where they were all alive and where the Kents flew to Metropolis a lot. It's nice. I think part of the reason why they didn't do a big moment like that was because maybe it would have been too much foreshadowing for the audience. Like it would have been, oh, we're having a lot of heartfelt moments with Jonathan.
Very true.
Maybe I should be suspicious of what might happen to this character.
Well, then, you know, right after Jonathan says that, I'm like, I can't imagine anyone else being, then who pops up on the balcony but Lois, right? The
yes,
show does
exactly.
A really good job of like inserting these characters right when these other things are said. Like even in the last couple episodes, that there was a moment where Clark was talking to Martha. And he's like, I can't imagine being with anyone but Lana. And then Lois pulls up in her car.
Yeah.
And like,
they have a really good job of inserting Lois into really weird moments where you're like, yeah, we get it. They're going to date.
We get it. So Lois pops up and says, hey, everybody, because she's Jonathan's campaign manager, so she's the point person. She's like, hey, everybody, I heard from the last districts. Looks like we have our new state senator. And everyone's like, woo, and it's he wins. And the reporter says it on the TV, and people are congratulating. And it's a great moment. So now Clark, the best day of Clark's life is now getting even better. Like, it's just like, this is the pinnacle of his entire life. He will never recapture this, despite trying to the next 5 years of his life.
Yes.
So then Jonathan gets a phone call. And he's like, oh, the congratulatory calls are already coming in. And he's like, hello. And he wanders off. And you're like, oh, well, that's all that is. I think that's smart. It's not, you don't know anything else about that. You just figure it's part of the night and you don't think about it anymore.
Exactly. Until, of course, later, which I will mention when we get there. Other people are getting phone calls, too. Apparently, cell phones were a mistake because they're the thing that leads everyone to die. Because Lana also gets a phone call.
From
the other Luther. And it's from Lex, and he's distraught. I like Lexmas and like the nice healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk more about the unhealthy part later when he gets weird about it in this episode. But Lex is a toxic person, and I think Lana is kind of also a toxic person in with certain people. Like I think she needs to find someone who isn't either a megalomaniacal evildoer or like the greatest superhero on the planet because she has inferiority issues.
Perhaps a Pete Ross type.
She needs a sidekick.
Who she marries in the comics, for those of you who don't know. So that's why I said that.
She marries Pete in the comics.
The thing about Lex and Lana, right, is like, I think this has been Kristen Couric and Lana's best season so far.
Yeah.
I think she's gotten the best material. I think she's gotten a lot of her strongest scenes. And a lot of them have come with Lex, but they're not in the whole, like, Lexana thing. Like, he has his thing, and that's fine. Like, if he's, like, kind of has a thing for her, he does it to kind of dig at Clark. Like, there are motivations and reasons why he could be into her. Her being into him, unacceptable. Do not like it.
No, doesn't make sense.
Works. Like your point, Lexmas worked in that kind of pocket universe of the future, and you don't know how they got there, and it's all happy, and everything seems on the level, and that's fine.
Right.
But here, not so much. But these scenes, like, they're great. Like, Rosenbaum is so good.
He's so good. Yeah, Rosenbaum is great. He's still the best Lex, although I do really like the John Cryer version in Supergirl.
Same.
But he's very, very good, and he's just a really great actor. And I do like Kristen Couric as an actress. I just don't like Lana, and I don't think that's her fault. Right. There are moments in season 4 where all of a sudden I was like, oh, crap, Lana can be not terrible. And I think season 5, you're right, she does get a lot of really good moments. Her and Lex as partners really works. Them as, you know, as a couple really doesn't, but I don't hate them as sort of like the one thing that Clark and Lex still have in common at this point. One thing they can agree on. Lex has emotional problems.
Yeah, even like his first line here is like, oh, I probably shouldn't have called. probably shouldn't do a lot of things I do, but I do them anyway. I'm like, hey, that's Lex Luthor right there, right?
He's drunk.
He's drunk, so he's talking out loud. He's being like there is no filter here.
Yeah.
You know, they have a little back and forth, him and Lana, and then he's like, I wanted to get out of my father's shadow, you know? And she's like, mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry, Lex. And then he says a crucial bad line. He says, well, consider yourself lucky. You've never had a father to endure. And she's like, I'm going to go. You know, which is a terrible thing to say, right?
Yes. You're drunk. We're going to go now.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, and I will see you. But again, his performance is great. He's like, see, I've upset you. Like, it's so on point because it's hard to act drunk in a non-comical way.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like in a dramatic way to be, you know, under the influence of something. Like your first inclination, especially from a comedic actor like Rosamund, be like, "Hey, I'm drunk." Yeah, see, that's easy to do, but when it has to be a lot more subtle, and I think he does it well. So she goes to like comfort him, and it's like, "Lex, you're not gonna lose me." And she puts his hand on his shoulder, and he like turns around and puts his hand on her hand, and he feels the ring.
He feels the ring. The ultimate betrayal. She can't be with another man. They've never been together.
He literally says, quote, you still chose him, which is like, oh, so that's what this is all about, right?
But I mean, also,
from Lex's
like,
perspective.
Who's choosing? There was no choosing. Like, Lex was never an option on the table.
Right.
Like, that.
But from his perspective, he was. Like, that tells you a lot. It's always been in competition between him and Clark.
Yes.
Especially about Lana. And so this escalates to the nth degree here. But he's so right, though. And this is why this is such a great scene. He's like, all the times you came to me asking about what Clark lied to you about, he must have told you. Or you would never. He's like, I know you. You never would have agreed to this if he hadn't told you. And it's like, it's so true because this drama, and like, it's so refreshing to see, you know, on this show, that the drama comes from an organic place of the characters and not just completely manufactured.
Yeah. It's not some, and it's not necessarily just that he's jealous. Like, he is jealous that they're together, but he's also jealous that Clark told her. And I've always liked that about the Clark and Lex relationship too, that's where it comes from. It's not just that Lex is megalomaniacal, it's that he's betrayed. And it's, you know, Clark never trusted him.
But I think you can make an argument for Clark should have telling Lex at some point as well.
Like, yeah,
I think
you can.
I mean, at some point, obviously, you get down to like season 6 or 7, he's gone too far. But you can look back and say, you know, if Clark had been honest with Lex, like at this point, at that point, perhaps he wouldn't have gone the dark path. And I think that's a legitimate thing to think. And
right.
She'll want you to think that.
And I agree with you. But I also think that, like, it did a great job. It just did a great job with that relationship in general, including the idea that, like, Clark wanted to tell Lex a lot over the course of the last few seasons. But every time he sort of got to that point, he was worried that something would happen with Lionel, that Lex would end up having to tell, or that something would happen where, you know, Clark's safety would be in danger, or Lex did something that made Clark think, I don't know if I can 100% trust you. I mean, at this point, the only person outside of now Lana that he's told willingly is Pete. I guess because everybody else was sort of like found out because of reasons, or like Alicia, I guess he told, but it was like a weird trade for them and he felt like he could finally tell someone. I've said before, I don't really like the Alicia relationship, but
Alicia.
But in terms of like this thing of the Clark and Lex dichotomy, or the animosity between them being about how Clark doesn't feel like he can trust Lex enough, and Lex feeling betrayed that Clark doesn't trust him. And I think that this is one of the things that, just to bring it back to like something like Supergirl that's on CW now, I think they've done a really good job in also exploring with the Kara and Lena relationship, because that's why there is animosity between them now, is because now Lena knows the truth and, you know, you didn't trust me enough to tell me this and I don't need friends and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm going to go do something that's probably terrible. And it's, you know, it's another one of those relationships where it's like, if you had just told her, maybe this wouldn't have happened. So I think that is always a better, more interesting superhero villain, you know, relationship than just I'm evil for reasons.
And as sympathetic as Lex has been and is in this scene, it takes a dark turn. He's like, tell me. Like, he grabs Lana and then she throws some alcohol in his face, and then he gets mad. I love the how he does it on both days.
Yeah.
for very different reasons. He gets mad, he picks up his glass of alcohol, he throws it into the fire, and it flames up. And I love that it happens in two completely different scenarios, because it's like, this is destiny, like, you know, this is what's going to happen. Like, it's a nice little visual thing.
It's destiny, but it's also who these people are, and especially who Lex is, where he doesn't react well to not getting what he wants.
Yes.
Or to things not happening the way he wanted them to, or to all of these things plus feeling disappointed in his own reaction, you know, because he just wants to talk, but he does it in the most dangerous way possible.
Yeah, so like she leaves, like, and runs out. She's on the road. Then we see Lex following her in his car, like, oh no. And Lana calls Clark, and he's like, oh, what's going on? She's like, Lex knows. I don't know. I didn't tell him anything, but he somehow realized it. And oh my God, he's following me. And Lana tells him where they are, which is near the Loeb Bridge, which is a reference to Jeff Loeb, the comic book author, and also the bridge where Lex ran Clark off the road in the pilot.
So, everything happens on that one road.
Well, it's a small town, Trish.
They only have one road. And so, also one horse. One horse town.
So they're all everyone's on their phones, as you said,
cell phones are the enemy.
Cell phones are the true enemy here. So they're all on the phones, and then Clark's talking to Lana, but then while all this is going on, Lex is pulling up. He's like, Lana, I just want to talk. I'm sorry. Let's pull over. And
oh, my God, a school bus.
The school bus comes out of nowhere, slams on his car. It's a great stunt. Flips over quite a few times. They talk about it in The Companion quite a bit, how they achieved it and all that. So I recommend you go in and pick it up. Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 5 by Craig Bearden. Available wherever books sold. For more information. So Clark super speeds up. It's interesting because Lex gets out. He's like, oh my God, Lana! And he's just stunned and looking at this accident. And Clark super speeds up right next to him. And Lex kind of sees him. He's like, oh. And so in that moment, he like kind of realizes, you know, what's Clark's all about.
Right.
And then he goes over to Lana, and Lana is, she's pretty messed up, but I wouldn't think she's, I mean, I don't know. They didn't check her pulse. Like, she.
No, and, but in both cases, they're just dead. Like, there is no ambulance, there is no doctor, there's no one pronouncing them dead. They're just dead.
Well, it's weird because, you know, Clark, he like holds her for a second. And then he pulls his hand back. There's so much blood on it. Yeah. I'm like, I guess it's supposed to be like the back of her head, maybe like.
Was bleeding. Yeah. No, she's dead. Dark she's, stuff. Yeah. She's dead. She's covered in blood. She's dead.
And then Jonathan shows up out of nowhere, and you're like, why is Jonathan here? But this will be revealed in take two.
But also, it's very easy to not think about the fact that Jonathan is there because, you know, maybe he happened to be nearby when Clark got the phone call and he saw Clark run out. And so I guess he's driving down the one road in town.
But there's so many episodes of Smallville where we're like, why is this character here? How would they know? Blah, 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 blah. So you chalk it up to that. You don't think about it, but there's a very specific reason.
And so much is already happening. Like, Lana is dead. You are like, the first time you're watching this, you're just, like, taking in the fact that, oh, Lana is dead. And you're not really thinking that it's weird that Jonathan also shows up, because of course he does. He's Jonathan Kent. He's got to be there to comfort his son and yank him away from the dead body.
And we have a plus one for main character death because Lana is dead.
Lana is dead. And now we've reached the halfway point.
Halfway point. You know, if you're just watching this episode out of, like, with no knowledge of anything going around it, and it's like, oh, it's halfway through. Like, you think, oh, is the second half going to be the aftermath of Lana's death? That's probably what you think. No, we're just going to redo what we just did.
I think for me, being a comic book person and like, being somebody who watches a lot of TV, halfway through, I'm like, okay, so they're going to fix it. Like, that's the point now, is now we're going to fix it.
This is genre television. This is what we do.
Yeah, this is what we do. If someone dies, if someone really, really important dies halfway through an episode, now we're going to fix it.
Now, I will say this about switching the deaths, because this is something I had used to think. I'm like, they should have killed Jonathan halfway through. And you'd be like, oh, well, we saw that coming. That's a shame. Then Clark switches it, and Lana's the one who dies, and she becomes the Gwen Stacy to his Peter Parker, right? And that's just what they did in this iteration. That is something I thought of, although, one, that would be, like, the nail in the coffin of Lex and Clark's rivalry is the fact that Lana died, and you really don't want that. Yeah. Although that's kind of what happened, like, the relationship, just the person of Lana is the thing that drove a wedge between them more than anything. Yeah. So the show kind of did that already, but also, I get that it's like fridging. I mean, really, you know, as well.
Which is what I was going to say. It's like, so I am a person. I think one of the reasons why I ended up on this episode was because when we talked about it, I said, oh, it's the episode where I wish they just let Lana die. because I do think that, but I don't, I think it for reasons outside of, so I'm glad they don't kill Lana because it is fridging. And the show manages, as far as I remember, not really to fridge anyone, which is remarkable for a show that goes on as long as it does and has as many female characters as it does. But at the same time, like, so I'm glad they didn't fridge Lana, but nothing good comes for her after this. Mm. This is the end. This is the beginning of the end for Lana Lang as a character that you care anything about, in my opinion. And so it, like, it's nothing but bad stuff. Like, this is the point where I stop caring about Lana, and everything beyond this is her paranoia about Clark or her weird relationship with Lex or eventually, like, her inferiority complex for dating someone with superpowers. And it's unfortunate that the character gets, I think, mistreated after this point. Mm-hmm. So I do kind of wish that she's gone away at this point.
And you have a character like Lois who's floating around and they're not really sure what to do with her a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And like, if you take Lana off the show, then Lois can be, you know, have more to do.
Which does happen.
Yeah.
And like, they go all in on Lois, but they wait a really long time to go. Till season eight to go all in.
Till Kristen Kirk leaves the show. That is the only reason. Like, I can only imagine, had she been like, no, nah, it's cool, I don't need to go make a Street Fighter movie, I'll be on the show for three more years. Like, what would they have done? I don't know.
If she'd had the foresight to realize that making a Street Fighter movie was a bad idea. if she had stayed on the show, if she decided to stay past 7 years, I mean, I think that probably would have resented that character more, but also who knows how long it would have taken them to make Lois and Clark a thing, but also just to give Lois more time. Like, she gets a lot to do, and she does get more to do come season six when they introduce additional heroes. But she's essentially like the rite of passage for the Justice League. Like, you gotta date Lois first. And it is a way for them to introduce more people through that character. So I'm glad that they end up going a little harder on Lois in season six. I think that they would have if they'd let Lana leave earlier.
And I think ultimately that's important for what we're saying. Like, had Lana gone to better places after this, we wouldn't be so like, well, they just should have killed her there. It's like, you know, Star Wars. They're making the first Star Wars movie. George Lucas is looking at the script. He's like, well, Obi-Wan lives past the Darth Vader duel, but he does nothing. He's useless. Let's just kill him off. and it actually works better for the story, right?
Right.
Very different situation, but I'm just saying, you gotta look ahead. But of course, they didn't know they were gonna run 10 years or
no.
seven or even, you know, they thought this was gonna be the last season going into it, most likely.
It's possible they thought this was gonna be, it's possible they thought this was gonna be the last season. I mean, they definitely thought seven was gonna be the last season.
Mm-hmm. Then but eight.
But in all of, you know, the choices they end up making down the line, they still never get Lois and Clark together and never really get toward that point because the Lana roadblock is there. As long as she's there, they're so preoccupied with her.
And that's where I think they missed a big opportunity. This show is about growing up, right?
Yes.
Finding out who you are, what your future holds for you. I think a huge missed opportunity, like, the easy way is, of course, oh, we're just going to kill Lana off, right?
Right.
That's the easy way. The difficult way is, like, let's write a story where these people who thought they were in love when they were younger, they understand, you know what, we're not a good fit. They kind of grow out from each other. There are two types of girls, the ones you grow out of and the ones you grow into, to quote Cody's note, right? And
yeah.
So, like, that would have been Lana, like, and it could have been, like, a... Because you can, you know, you can just grow apart from people and go your separate ways, and that's life. And I think, I mean, that's a very nuanced thing to do on a show like this. So I'm not surprised they didn't do it. I just think that's what they should have done, and it would have been a lot more organic than, oh, Lana's gone now. Now she's back. Now she has superpowers. Now she has kryptonite. Now we can't be together. Oh, I guess I'll go with Lois. That was what they did.
That is what they did. And there's it, but it takes so long, and it takes getting rid of Lana for it to happen. That, like, I think if. I think they just should have had her go away this season. The relationship with Clark wasn't working. They're not going to be Endgame. Like, that's the rule. So have them move on. Have her move on with her life and, you know,
go back to France. Season three. Yeah, at the end of season three, she moved to France. You're like, oh, well, maybe they wrote her off the show. No, we're going to bring her back in. I'm like, you had perfect opportunities to do this.
Right. Graduation is a perfect cut, you know, for getting, you know, leaving behind the high school people he knew and going forward into this new era. And they just didn't
do it. Also, this is a different era of television where it's like, this is the cast forever. Yeah. Like, it's not like Game of Thrones where it's like, here's your main characters. Oh, they're dead now. We're moving on. Or they you know, so it's like you don't shake stuff up unless there's no creative decisions to shake up a cast. It's always actor driven. So that's another thing going on as well. But hey, Reckoning, right?
The 100th episode. Yes, that episode that we're talking about where we only reached the halfway point.
But I think that was an important tangent to dive into.
Yeah, I do too.
This was a turning point of the entire series right here this moment.
So. Yeah, and a turning point of many characters.
So then Clark goes to Jor-El, you know, as you do. And
your space dad.
He's really upset, as you would be. I mean, I think Welling does a good job, really good job in this episode, really, with all the emotions he has to display, happiness, sadness, all these things. Like, he is the gambit of emotions he has to display, and I think he's come a long way, you know, as an actor. So, and he's pleading with Jor-El. He's like, "This was not her destiny." And Jor-El's like, "We are not gods, Kal-El." I'm like, and we're like, as we said earlier, are you, really? Because it seems like you are.
up to this point,
you're omnipresent, you're all powerful.
Yeah, up to this point, you've kind of proven that you are, because, like, you can give superpowers to mortals, and you can kill people, and take back, and, like, bring them back from the dead, and you can take Clark's powers away. Like, you're kind of a god, so, of course, here's a crystal.
So, there's only one crystal, right? This is what Jor-El tells him. Like, there's no second chances, there's only one crystal.
I'm glad I packed the one time travel crystal that you might need in case of emergency.
But he does say there is one trial you have yet to experience. And, like, what are we talking? Are we talking about loss? Are we talking about understanding you just can't use time travel to fix things? You know, which is a lesson all superheroes learn. Like, on the Flash, that's what the Flash is all about.
The Flash never learned that.
Well, he never learns it, but that's why he keeps trying to teach it to him.
He never
got Jay Girk's got to pull you out of the Speed Force. Like, bro, what are you doing? Enough.
So, he's used time travel too many times. Anyway.
Now, and you know, as a 19-year-old watching this, I'm like, Clark, don't do that. It's so stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as someone who, again, lived some life, loved and lost and loved and all that good stuff, you're like, oh, I understand why you do this.
Yeah.
Because it's...
No, if you're...
You have blinders on to this one thing that's happened, and you have to fix it. Damn the consequences, right?
Yeah, if you're desperate and grieving, like, you take that one opportunity to save the person you love, because you don't think that... I mean, even though he says, you know, there's going to be... You can't do it again, and there's going to be consequences. Like, okay... I get back the thing that I wanted.
I'll deal with those when they come up, right? That's what you think. So I buy it. Especially, hey, this is a teenage Superman.
Learning on the job,
trials and errors. So at this point, we have a plus one for a movie plot as an episode. And I'm really not sure what movie we should say. Groundhog Day is one of my favorite movies of all time, so I kind of say that. Perhaps Butterfly Effect. I don't know. Is there a particular movie
Superman
you think
this
might apply to?
It's Superman the movie. It's I Must Turn Back Time to Save Lois.
But there's no consequences in that one.
I guess there's no consequences in that one, unless you consider if he turned back time to save Lois, did all of the people that he saved in the original version of time just die?
Were there two versions
of Superman?
It was 1978. You know, audiences and storytelling wasn't that sophisticated, right?
So it's
like what we should have seen was like two Supermen and they kind of merge and, you know, that kind of thing. But
we never see that. So I'm going with the consequence was he let all the innocent people die and save Lois anyway.
That's his weakness, Kryptonite and Lois.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the movie plot is exactly.
I guess I would say more Butterfly Effect.
More Butterfly Effect, yeah.
Because it's like, that's the lesson here where it's like, I have to keep going back and changing things. And as the Butterfly Effect says, right, you have no idea what those choices will ripple into the rest of reality. So I think, and of course, that's a contemporary movie around this time. It came out just Ashton Kutcher, by the way, Erica Durant stars in the sequel to Butterfly Effect.
Yes, the very, very, very bad sequel to a very bad movie. Butterfly Effect was not a good movie.
But I think the Erica Durant's connection alone says we're going to go with Butterfly Effect. So.
We're going to go with Butterfly Effect. And also Superman the movie.
So we go back to the Kent farm at the first scene of the episode. It's so great. The day is repeating to the point where we're hearing the same music.
Yep. It's the same song, only now weird. It's sad.
Be with you. And the scene, it takes a terrible turn because Lana's like, hey, I'm here. We're happy. And Clark's like, oh my God, it's you. She's like, oh, of course it's me. Because of course, the last time he saw her, she was dead.
Right. And bloody.
Yeah, covered in blood. And he basically says, all right, well, hey, well, let's go to the lake. And you can tell, I think Kristen Kirk does a great job. You can tell, like, oh, I'm being crushed inside because this guy's lying to me yet again. He promised like a day we'd never forget. And now he's like, oh, it's no big deal. I just want to spend some time together. So Clark, he totally botches this, right?
Yes.
But you understand why, because he's so like, oh no, I cannot do what I did because she'll die. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so he does everything differently instead of like one little thing, but he has no plan. And it's unfortunate that he got dropped at that moment and not like when he woke up that morning so that he could like plan for what he was going to say. Instead, it's just like, oh, no, she's here. And now I have to make an excuse for why we're not going to the Arctic. And he doesn't.
It's this mystical version of time travel. So you don't know, like, what are the rules of the mechanics? You know, so you're absolutely right, though. Had he been able to kind of plan things out better, he wouldn't have called her and said, hey, I'm going to tell you my secret today.
Right. Exactly. Like a really day you'll never forget.
Because she is so like, all right, we're done now. Because as he had said, we're drifting. It's my fault. And the first, and day take one, day take two, this is the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know what? You know, I need a break. And he's like, from me? And she says, from us.
From us.
And I said, isn't that the same thing? Like, what is...
Yeah, it is. It is the same thing. It's not the same thing, but it is the same thing.
Also, some heart-crushing dialogue here is Lana's like, what could be worse than losing the person you love? And Clark says, nothing. And they're talking about the same thing, but they don't know it. So anyway, that's it. They're done now. They've broken up for the last
time. They're on a break. It's different.
We were on a break.
Yes, they are on a break. Like, obviously, I don't think that Lana thinks that she and Clark are done. I think that Lana thinks that they need to take a step back and reevaluate their relationship.
But she tells Lex later that Clark and I had our last fight.
Okay. Yeah, so eventually I think she decides that now we're done. But then they're together at the end of the episode. Anyway, yeah, it's unfortunate that's how it goes, but that is how it goes. Like, if he's not going to be honest with her, then maybe they should be broken up. Like, he just wants to protect her. Okay, so stop dating her.
See, that's the thing about secret identities, people. That's the key. Right? That's the key. That's why you have the secret identity. So people come after Superman, not Clark Kent. But you haven't figured that out yet.
The thing that always bothered me about Superman when he didn't tell Lois, like anytime it was Superman and Lois are have a thing, but Clark doesn't want to tell her who he really is, you know, it's for her own safety. If you don't want people to threaten Lois to get to Superman, then stop making it so that the only reporter Superman talks to is Lois Lane. Because you're still drawing a target on her back.
Well, yeah, that's like, why half the criminals are like, we're going to capture this lady here. And even Superman, too, like, hey, grab this little lady and he'll be around anytime to see her.
Right, exactly. So she's actually in more danger because she doesn't know who you are. Yes. So you got to pick. It's one or the other.
So then we get take two of Clark and Chloe at the Daily Planet. She has a crack about, what, did you spin the Earth backwards on its axis? Because we've all seen Superman the movie, right? It's a little reference there. Because he's like, it's going to be hard for you to believe. Put your Walt Weird hat on. But I've lived this day before. And then we go through our three things. The woman gets the flowers. The guy quits. You can't fire me. I quit.
Just overacting like crazy.
We get the phone call from the Chinese restaurant. And Chloe's like, oh, I'm sorry. We're all out of egg rolls. I really like the way that Allison Mack played that. That was really good. And that's, you know, Clark proving to her that he lived the day again. But really, I mean, they've been through stranger things, right?
Well, which I appreciate that it's just like, here is the 2 minutes it's going to take for me to convince you that I've lived this day before. And she's like, okay.
So, but think about this, right? Now we're getting really nitpicky, but like, he took Lana to the fortress and they went through that whole experience and then they came back and then obviously he went and talked to Chloe after that. So what did he do? Did he wait until the same time he was at the Daily Planet before? Did he think it through? Maybe Clark's smart and I give him credit for it. He's like, oh, I know. I was at the Daily Planet at 1 p.m. last time. And I know these things happen, so I'm going to go back at 1 p.m. But see, I don't think Clark's that smart.
I don't think Clark's that smart either. Maybe he just, like, moped around for a while.
See, that'd be more in character as well. So I can buy that. So,
and then he said, I guess I should go talk to Chloe for some reason.
Then she calls him McFly, back to the future reference.
Back to the future reference.
And then he tells her, okay, I told Lana my secret. She's like, what? And then he's like, and I also asked her to marry me. She's like, what? And... I love what happens here in this exchange. She's like, well, what was my reaction? And Clark's like, pretty much like that. I was like, that's great. That is the characters and the show being self-aware for this one scene about the awkwardness of this entire just love square that's going on.
With the love rhombus.
Yes. So
love rhombus is
then,
my favorite.
You know, and then Clark makes the point here, which I will make, have it's kind of I've liked that this point was made, is because he's like, Chloe, she knew less than a day.
Mm-hmm. Like, and she was already dead.
It's like this is his greatest fear. Like, uh-huh. Why? It's like, Clark, why don't you just tell Lonnie your secret? I don't know. I'm afraid something will happen to her. I'm just trying to protect her. He finally tells her. She dies like 12 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay. So to me, this kind of reinforces his attitude. It's like, well, I can't tell her.
Yeah.
Right?
It does. It reinforces his attitude. And I think it informs the way he deals with other people moving forward, is that it's really hard for him to tell people. Like, he doesn't tell Lois.
Years.
Like, he more or less doesn't tell her at all. Like, she knows. And then she goes to Egypt. And
she goes to, as you do.
As you do, you find out that the person you're in love with is a superhero, so you go to Egypt and hang out with another superhero. But, like, he has a really hard time telling people because he's afraid for them. And that's, and I appreciate that later in the series, Chloe gets upset with him about it. She's like, you just keep doing this. But yeah, I think this decision, this idea that, like, it reinforces the fact that knowing his secret is dangerous, I think just reinforces what he already thinks. And it sort of adds to his trauma.
All right. And then they come to the agreement, like, all right, Chloe's like, I'm going to watch Lana, make sure she doesn't, you know, go see Lex. And,
yeah.
And Clark's like, all right, because we just got to keep her off that road. So then it's election night again.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kents show up and Clark's like clearly bothered. And Jonathan's like, everything okay? He's like, yeah, great, Dad. Yeah, it's great. And the election results come in, but Lois doesn't announce, and they just see him on the TV. Apparently, all day, no one has thought to check on Lois.
The campaign manager.
I guess they assume she's out there doing busy campaign things. But as we've established in this episode, cell phones are a thing.
Yes, cell phones are a thing. Lois has one. She's been depicted with it. Yeah, no one noticed. And it makes you wonder, like, how long she was lying on the floor in her apartment unconscious. Mm-hmm. That
hours,
it had to have been hours, because like there were some results that started coming in. The timeline of this entire episode is weird because like polls don't close until 7 most places, and yet she was getting poll results, exit poll results, you know, pretty early.
But that was at 11 p.m. though, when they announced his victory, which just seems about right. Or I guess, well, Lana died at 11, so you can say that they announced his victory like 10:30. So.
Yeah, no, that's accurate. Like, it being about 10:30, 11 when he finds out that he's,
like,
won is accurate.
I nitpick this show to death when it's inaccurate. I want to give it credit when
yeah,
when
no,
it
that
tries.
That timing is accurate, but like Lana shows up at the talent and catches Lois, like literally physically catches her at like 2 in the afternoon. So has she been unconscious on the floor of her apartment for 9 hours?
Apparently.
I mean, that's really like there's some serious brain damage happening. That's all I'm saying.
So he runs upstairs to say Lois. It's not just, and I thought this was overkill.
Yeah.
Back in the day, but now I realize why it's overkill. So he goes up to Lois's apartment, and mm-hmm. he sees she's knocked out. The sink
in
is on when she fell. It's a puddle. When she fell over, she knocked over a toaster or something. The puddle is finally reaching the toaster. She's going to get electrocuted and die. So he picks her up and saves her. But that the toaster hitting the puddle causes the power to go out at the Talon, which I'm like, why? But that's so Lana can get away from Chloe to go see Lex. So it actually is, quote unquote, well thought out.
Yeah, no, it is well thought out. And it's also sort of a moment where it's like the oof moment of like Clark thinks, oh, it was Lois and now it's not Lois. So I think you're okay.
I don't think the show ever recognizes or acknowledges that.
Oh, you don't? Because like, I always thought it did.
Okay. I just don't think like, it's not even a thing to any of the characters. Why did you think it did? Clark's reaction?
Yeah, I think it's Clark's reaction. I think it's the fact that he Like, it's, wait, where's Lois? And immediately he's worried that, I think he's worried that she's dead, that that's who he's traded. And he runs upstairs and he finds her.
So he loves Lois after all, huh?
Of course he does. By this point, he definitely does. And he picks her up, and like the second after he picks her up, the electrocution happens. And I think that's the moment. I think for the audience, that was also meant to be sort of the release of tension of, okay, so Lois is fine. Like,
see, I submit to you that the timeline we see in Lexmas is this timeline where he doesn't save Lois. Because Jonathan is senator.
Yeah.
Lex and Lana are together, and there is no Lois in that feature. And Clark is kind of with Chloe in that feature, which was great for me at the time, being a Clark fan and a Lois, C-H-L-O-I-S person. But... clearly, Chloe took her name to honor her and became a star reporter of the Daily Planet.
Obviously, that's what happened. Yeah, I like Lexmas, but whatever. I can sort of
these
see
are the
where
things you think about when you analyze these shows.
Yeah, I can see where you're going with that. I just remember watching it the first time, and that sort of like I knew that wasn't what was going to happen, but I could see it being like I could see the writing, sort of like the mechanics of the writing being like, well, let's ratchet up the tension so you think, oh my god, it's Lois, it's not Lois. Okay, so now we're gonna ratchet up the tension again.
Jonathan, remember Jonathan got that phone call?
Nah,
right?
Cell phones are the enemy.
It's from Lionel Luther.
Yeah.
And he's like, now that we've won, right? I'm like, oh, no, that's where Jonathan went. So Jonathan has gone to meet with Lionel Luther. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Lana has again gone to see Lex, as we've seen. And it starts out exactly the same, the scene, which is great. And then it, again, like these other scenes we've seen, it takes another turn. And she's like, Clark and I had our last fight. And Lex is like, oh, all right, well, this is my opportunity, right?
And now I'm going to make out with your face.
Well, he says, Lana, I think Clark may never trust you. She's like, I don't understand. Why would you lie to someone you love? And he's like, he puts his glass down. He holds her shoulders. Yeah. He's like, I wouldn't.
Except that you do. I literally shouted that at the TV because that he says, I would never lie. I wouldn't lie to someone that I love. And I'm like, your entire relationship is built on a lie.
I think Lana handles it pretty well, though. She's like, all right.
No, she does.
Pulls away. She's like, I'm going to go. You're drunk. I understand. This is a tough night for you. We'll just forget this happened. And Lex is like, oh, I'm sorry. And she leaves. And then it's Lex. He's frustrated, right? So he picks up his glass and he throws it into the fire again. I was like, yes. I loved that. I love the repetition of that.
Yeah, because it's like we said before, it's, you know, it was always going to happen this way. Lex, you know, was always going to overreact and chase her down a highway.
Yeah, it makes sense he followed her again, too, because he's like, oh, God, I messed up. I got to fix this, right?
Yeah.
So then we come back to the Talon, and Lois is being carted off to the hospital. So we have a plus one for hospital visit.
Yeah.
I guess just the mere act of being picked up by Clark, she's regained consciousness, right?
Oh, just so many brain problems.
But that explains all the bad choices they continue to make throughout the course of the series. That's the way I see it. So Chloe comes to Clark. She's like, we can't find Lana. And then Clark looks at his watch. He's like, oh, no. It's time, right? And we see the cars going down the road, and we see the bus. We see that the reason the bus like ran a stop sign was because like the kids are being rowdy. They're coming back for some football game or something, I guess. And the bus driver's like, "Hey, you kids, keep it down!" And they run the stop sign, and they would have hit Lana and then, you know, all that stuff. But Clark super speeds, stops the bus. So Lana and Lex see that they almost got hit by this car, so they get out of the car, and Lex's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry," and Lana's like, oh, it's okay. Just we'll forget about this and we'll go our separate ways here. And again, I want to take some screenshots of all these episodes where Clark is like far away.
Yeah.
And like he sees Lex and Lana like hugging or kissing or some sort of thing. Because that exact same shot composition has happened so many times.
Right? And then he super speeds away.
Yeah. And it's like, was he there? No, he wasn't.
So, never. He was never there.
But it's like, yeah, that's the worst thing to see. Like, I think I don't know which episode it is later in season 5, but when he first finds out Lana and Lex are together, he comes to the mansion, like, I don't know why, right? To maybe see Lex. And then he's in the doorway, and he just sees them kissing. He's like, what? Like, that's like the worst thing you could ever imagine. Like, your ex-best friend is now with the love of your life, and they're making out, and he didn't know they were a couple. So, anyway.
But then also Jonathan Kent is there.
Yes, I love this shot where like their destiny switch at this point, right? Get the slow motion, like Lana sees Jonathan, they kind of have eye contact, and you know, all that Lois stuff aside, we were talking about, this is the moment where like Lana's fate now becomes Jonathan's fate, I think. And I think that was very subtle and very well directed as he goes off on his way and meets Lionel at the barn. And Lionel, like, what, I don't know what his intentions are here. Like he has quote unquote good intentions, because he has, he's protecting Clark's secret, but he's going about it in a horrible way, and like the most Lionel way possible. And Jonathan is not responding well to it, nor does he respond to Lionel calling his senatorialship a partnership. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And Lionel is a weird character to really like parse, I think, in a lot of ways, because in the same way that Lex and Clark have this weird push-pull relationship over Lana, Jonathan and Lionel kind of have the same one over Martha.
Yes.
And it's odd and strange. And I think it's intentional, but it's still odd and strange. And yeah, but also like Jonathan never doesn't trust a Luther at all, regardless. Like there are no Luthers with good intentions. He's made very, I think Jonathan over the course of the series makes a lot of very poor decisions based on that. And I don't know that this is one of them, because yeah, just because you gave him money for his campaign doesn't mean that he's gonna like do what you want him to. But also it's not Lionel's fault he had a heart attack.
Yeah, I mean it triggers this event.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like it's like you said at the very beginning, like there's all these other things going on around Jonathan having a heart attack. Like, why does he have a poor heart? Because he had the superpowers. Why are we in this position? Because Clark resurrected Lana in reverse time. Why Jonathan got in a fight with Lionel, like he let his like anger kind of take over. And that was, you know, I will say like that's a character trait of him throughout the show that it pays off in this way, because his temper had always been like one of his greatest downfalls. Mm-hmm. And that is what, I mean, not that he should sit down and be like, all right, Lionel, what do you want to do? But he could have handled this a little less hotheadedly.
Yeah.
And because he hates Luther so much, like I guess he gets presented by this picture of, you know, Clark using his powers, as we'll find out at some point.
Right, as we find out later.
I'm not going to let you destroy my family, right? That's the classic, you know, Jonathan line about anybody. Like, I'm not going to let you destroy my family. So you know, gives Lionel kind of a beat down and tells him to get off his property. But then you kind of see, like, the heart attack settling in with his arm. So I think it's really well acted.
I think it's really well done. I think it was, like, all of it was good. I think that it's still not Clark's fault. So I don't think it's anyone's fault necessarily, except maybe Jonathan's for not like remembering that he has to keep his stress levels down and just starting to get into a fist fight with Lionel Luther for no reason. but I mean, there were a lot of other circumstances, and I do think it's well put together. It's unfortunate that Lionel decided to like run off.
Well, it's like that horror movie shot of like you see the crumpled up picture and you see Lionel's hand stretch out and shake.
Yeah.
So like, oh, he still has that information, as if he wouldn't have a copy of that somewhere. But you know, right. Just so you, as the audience, realizes what's going on. But I think Jonathan's death scene here is wonderfully underplayed. He wanders out into the driveway. Martha and Clark pull up in a car, and they just see Jonathan kind of wandering around, because I mean, he's suffering from a heart attack now. And there's no final words of wisdom. There's no platitudes. Nope. There's none of this. It's just he shares eye contact with both of them. You know, has a little moment of like a nod. And then he dies. And I think it's wonderfully underplayed.
Yeah, no, I do too. I think it's wonderfully underplayed, and it's the same, but it's the same thing with like the Lana thing where it's like, oh no, just dead. Just no fanfare. Just nope, just dead. No, well, Clark rushing him off to the hospital. Anyway.
Yeah. No hospital visit for Jonathan Kent or Lana earlier. I mean, they're just dead on the scene. Mm-hmm. So then there is a deleted scene here.
Oh.
Where Clark takes Jonathan's body to the fortress and pleads with Jor-El to undo it. Now, we don't hear Terrence Stamp's voice in this deleted scene because it's an incomplete scene. But they eventually decided against it, and the companion Al Goff talks about it. And he says, "We just felt it was too much. It was something that sounded great on paper, but it felt like a little bit of a stutter step in the episode." So I agree, because it's kind of morbid, because you see like Clark carrying his dead body to the fortress. Like, he didn't do that with Lana. At least we didn't see that. Like, when he pled with Jor-El earlier, it was just Clark there by himself.
Right.
But when he's pleading with Jor-El now, he's carrying Jonathan's body. And he does say to Jor-El that Jonathan is the only father that Clark will ever have. You know, so it's a little bit kind of showing his mindset, kind of digging at Jor-El, because he blames Jor-El for this. It is right. All Jor-El's fault.
It is. No, it is 100% Jor-El's fault. Yeah, I agree with the not using that scene, too, because I, in addition to it being morbid, I don't think it adds anything because Nothing can come of it. It's just torturing the character and the audience with it further.
Yes.
And it's better, in my opinion, to just go from the realization that he's dead to, and now it's the funeral. Mm-hmm. The day of the funeral, and they immediately cut to the funeral.
Yes. Oh, we have another plus one for main character death for John. Mm-hmm,
we do.
Here. And
do you count Lana as a plus one, even though she's undead?
I do, because I also counted Lana dying in Crisis when Adam Knight, not Bruce Wayne, killed her with a shotgun.
Right, right.
So, you know, whenever a main character dies on screen, like Martha, when she died in Fever, I counted that as well, because she was pronounced dead.
She was pronounced dead.
That's how I do it. Clark, I also count him as
Clark,
dead.
Yep.
Yeah, and hidden. So, yes.
All right.
Lots of deaths and resurrections on this show.
Clark's lots of death and resurrections. There are very few actual deaths that stick.
Yeah. Whitney.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan.
Mm-hmm. Future
Lionel.
Ones.
But then Lionel comes back from an alternate universe.
Yeah, it's not the same Lionel, though.
But so does Jonathan. So.
That's also true, yeah.
So, as you said, we're at the day of the funeral here.
Yes.
And, you know, they're getting ready for the funeral. Martha can't get that necklace on, so Clark's like, you want me to help me with that? So that's a nice little subtle mm-hmm. thing, I think, from earlier. And, you know, Clark, you know, he's really upset about this, and as you would be, and he's like, I don't know how to be the man he wanted me to be. And Martha has some great advice. She's like, you're a man he's proud of, you know, that he'd look up to and that the rest of the world will too one day, or something like that, something along those lines, right?
One of the things,
I get the feeling he won't be the only one.
Right, yeah, that's what it is. One of the things that I appreciated about the scene was that they don't say it, but the way, like, the actual words in the conversation let you know that Clark didn't hide the fact that it's like that he thinks it's his fault that he turned back time to save Lana and his dad died, because she says something like, you know, how could you have chosen between them? Like, you never would have been able to. And I think ultimately, if you told Jonathan, like, my choices are you or Lana, he would have said, okay, me. So I'm glad that it sort of like it doesn't have a scene of him walking up to his mom and being like, this is my fault. I'd made Jor-El turn back time to save Lana and now dad is dead. It's just like, no, it's fine. Where I don't blame you and you shouldn't blame yourself.
I agree. I think that's real efficient storytelling.
Yeah.
Because as you said about that deleted scene, it's more torturing the characters and the audience more.
Yeah.
Having to go through all that. And we've seen it. We know what happened. And we know what kind of Mother Martha is, and she would mm-hmm. understand. And I think that's important. Like, I wouldn't want him to, like, I'm glad that wasn't a thread of, like, him keeping that a secret. Like, oh, mm-hmm. God, do I tell my mom or not what I really did? Because I could see him doing that.
Yeah, I could see them doing that, too. Like, it being two episodes of him torturing himself until finally he breaks down and tells her what happened, and then she forgives him. But I'm glad they skipped that.
Right, we have a scene from, like, Spider-Man 2 when Peter tells Aunt May that he's the reason that Uncle Ben got shot, that kind of
thing. Right.
So, but another thing on that. When Martha tells Clark, do you think you could have chosen between them? I say, Clark, at this point of his life, he absolutely would have chosen Lana over his dad.
He never would have chosen. He would have tried to save both, and then they both would have ended up dying.
Right.
Yeah, like, the thing about him is that he can't choose, and that's part of his flaw, as we find out later down the line in season 8 when he can't choose.
That's right.
Yeah, So I think it was just it's a good scene. It's a nice
Absolutely.
Little scene. Also, as it begins at the end of the scene, it is the time of it's like the, there was like a 2 or 3 year period where any time there was a funeral, it was set to "I Grieve" by Peter Gabriel. Mm-hmm. It was the same song. Everyone remembers it.
But there's a reason why everyone used it, because it fits so well.
It does. It's like it's particularly fitting, but also
I mean,
everyone
on the nose.
Used it.
Right. But you're right. So it is "I Agree" by Peter Gabriel, and we have our funeral scene. Smallville does funeral scenes very well, as we've seen many times in the show, and that goes on past this. You know, I think back to Whitney's dad's funeral, and mm-hmm. "Crush" was really great. "Time After Time" by Eva Cassidy. That's a seminal Smallville moment.
It is.
Even if you fast forward to Lionel's funeral, you mm-hmm. know, in season 7, which is a great season 7. We've been dogging on it here, and it's
I love season 7.
Season. It's my least favorite season.
We've had these conversations where I like things that you don't. So,
but that's the fun of the conversation.
I know.
So, it'd be boring if we agreed. But you know, you contrast this between Lionel's funeral and this funeral and then who's there and the looks of the characters, and it's great is what I'm saying. So yeah. Smallville always nails the funeral scenes.
They do with their tiny little cemetery.
That's right. They have this kind of washed out look, you know, desaturated, overexposed look, which fits like kind of the mood. And all the character reaction shots here are very interesting. Like, if there was one shot of this entire series that says, like, yes, Chloe and Lois are the same character, it's like when they're both walking away wearing the same thing, and they both look over their shoulder the same way at Clark, and they both walk away. I was like, yes, this is... Anyway, that's something that I zeroed in on. But you see Lex is far away because he's like, I want to support him, but I'm kind of their enemy now. And,
right.
Which Lionel, also happens to Lionel, too. Lionel does this hilarious, like, circling of Martha from behind. It's unintentionally hilarious to me where Lionel pops up behind her, huh?
He's just sort of like weirdly ominous in the background. But then also you have Lana next to Clark, like holding his hand because they're not together. But also they're not together.
They're on a break, as you said.
They're on a break, as I said. And yet I don't feel like they entirely feel like they have to be separate because, like, Lana feels like she can't break up with Clark because his dad just died. That's not a great reason to stay in a relationship.
There's a lot of poor relationship advice this show.
It really is. It's just like, don't make your... If you watch a superhero show and do the opposite of literally everything anyone does.
Well, that must have been part of my problem when I was in high school. Gosh. No,
I was trying to emulate my heroes. They're really bad at relationships.
But you know, on a serious note here, you know, the grave, the coffin goes into the ground and Clark puts dirt on it. And it's you know, it's a real moment, you know? And I think it was really effective. Like, at the time, I was like, so much had happened in this episode. It was hard to assimilate. And I feel like, I do feel like it totally works here. But at the time, I did feel like they kind of, it worked better in Vengeance the next episode when they had more time to really delve into the fact that he had passed away. Because, you know, in an episode where Jonathan dies, it happens in the last, you know, less than 10 minutes. And for a character we've been with for 4.5 seasons, and it's a lot to take in. You're like, wow, I'm never going to see John Schneider on the show again. That's crazy. So I think this is complemented well by the follow-up on the next episode.
Right, yeah.
And a final word from the companion on this episode. Greg Beeman, the director, was actually, he was kind of taken aback by the fan reaction to the episode of how it worked out. He said, quote, "I was sort of surprised when I went on Krypton's site after the episode aired, and a lot of people were slagging it because they didn't dig the go back in time and turn things around device. They were like, this is a betrayal. And I was actually very surprised by that." Because, you know, as we said, you know, the people who love Clark and Lana are like, oh, they're finally together. And then they kill her and they're like, oh no. But then they resurrect her and like, yay. But then they break up or they go on a break and like, oh no. Right. And the people that love Jonathan, you know, it's like, oh, well, Jonathan died. What? And then he's dead. And so it's like, it's a no-win scenario. Unless you wanted to see Clark and Lana break up and Jonathan die, then you're not happy. But that, I mean, Clark's not supposed to be happy here. This is the journey of Clark. Mm-hmm. You're with him. I get it. But I think I understand the fan reaction at the time. Like, I wasn't shouting for the rooftops how great this was either back in the day. So.
Yeah. I mean, I understand the fan reaction too. But at the same time, it's a movie based on comic books and this happens in comic books. So
what?
I don't know if you knew this. This happens in comic books. So I don't think I didn't watch it when it aired. I watched it very quickly, binging through the entire series in like a month. So I didn't have time to really care that much about whether or not I liked it. I just kept going. I just was barreling towards the end of the season and I had to keep going.
Clark. I know you're blaming yourself, but this was not your fault.
How can you say that? I went back to save Lana. And now Dad's gone.
Do you think you could have chosen between them if you'd had the chance? Clark. A heart beats only so many times in a life. Your father used his more than anyone I know.
I just don't know how I'm supposed to be the man he wanted me to be without him here.
You're his son. You know what's right and wrong. Whether your father is here with us or not. You're a man he's proud of. A man he could look up to. And something tells me he won't be the only one.
Reckoning got a 9.5 out of 10 on IMDb. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage had kind of a conflicted review. He reviewed the first half of the episode as a 5, the second half as a 1. And then he said, well, you decide, it's somewhere in the middle, but you could call it a 2.5. So for his score, I'll just put all 3 so you know and put an asterisk by it or something. But he came down on about 2.5 because absolutely loved the first half, absolutely did not like the second half, having undone so much of what was done in the first half. Mm-hmm. Although that was kind of the point of the episode. So but there you have it. There's his take. So Trisha, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Reckoning?
These are always such difficult answers. I think it's a high B plus for me.
Okay.
Because I think it's a good episode, but it's a little too fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, crammed a little too much.
Yeah.
I mean, as we said, 2 episodes in the span of 1.
Basically. Right, yeah. And because I know they do a lot better with like a big monumental episode later in the series.
Very fair. Very fair.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give it an A.
Okay.
Which is higher than I would have back in the day. I know a lot of people, this is like A+. I mean, look at these IMDb score. I mean, 9.5 is extremely high.
Yeah, that's way higher than I ever would have given this episode, to be honest. I think there are better episodes in the season. Big stuff happens. It's just not my favorite.
In importance, it's of course, you know, on the top 10 episodes. Like, if you give someone like a Cliff Notes version of Smallville, this is absolutely on the list for mm-hmm. just its importance. But yeah, not quite an A+ for the things we were talking about, but I do appreciate how well crafted. Like, they understood this is the 100th episode. We got to do something important. We got to make it work on all these levels. And I think they did a really good job with that. So B+ for you, A for me. Let's move on to our tally board.
Alrighty.
We have a +1 for hospital visits. We have 79. Because Lois went to the hospital, so 79 so far in 100 episodes. So we are only, guys, we're only 21 off from the actual episode count. So I live for the day where the hospital visits matches the episode count. We have a +2 for main character deaths because Lana dies and Jonathan dies. We're counting mm-hmm. both. That brings us to 8 so far in the series. And then we have a +1 for movie plot as an episode. That brings us to 12. I think the movie we decided on was Butterfly Effect. So there you have it. And then the Bechdel test is a fail this episode, isn't it, Trisha?
It is. I don't think... I mean, every conversation between two women is about guys. And by every, I mean, there's really only one. It's the one between Lois and Lana. And they're talking about Clark. So.
All right, Trisha. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk about the 100th episode of Smallville with me this week. Where can people find you and your work out there online?
Well, you can find me mostly on Twitter. It's at Trisha Ennis, TRICIAENNIS. I'm weird on Twitter. Mostly right now I'm talking about Birds of Prey. And that will probably continue for like a month because I love that movie. But they can also find my work on sci-fi.com. So sci-fi.com/fangirls is where you'll find it most easily. Mine and my companions over on the site. Good times, good stuff, and hope to see you guys there.
Alrighty, as for me, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue, where we talk about movie franchises, sequels, reboots, remakes, when a franchise gets fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at UFPEarth. And as for the podcast here, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with 1S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville. And you can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com, once again with 1S. That's going to do it for us this week, but stay tuned next time for Vengeance. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. You're beautiful. It's true. I saw your face in a crowded place. And I don't know.
to face the truth. I will never be with you.
Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Dallas Hernandez, Cavante Chillis, Chris Fuchs, Jim Thomas, Joe Makendo, Steve Rogers, Thomas Navin, Tim Miller, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Mariotti Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Casey Cochran, Andrew Parker, Catherine Emmerich, James Lee, James Bandini II, Adam Sullins, Corey Moore, Dylan D'Antonio, Kathleen Holland, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Rachel Miller, Will Hunt, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Coso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Darren Kirsch, Anthony Anderson, Joey Deinberg, Fress Horshey, Lonnie Williamson, and Dave Giannoccio. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there!